Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We want a dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear are opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to all of our free audience here for our edition of Rewind a Dynamite tonight. I am joined here in the co-host chair with Collision Course's Kate from Montreal. Nice to have you around, Kate.
Thank you very much for having me.
We kind of have to do this awkward, like, hello two times because we kind of, like, do a version of the show within the show now.
Anyway, hello again.
Hello again, yes. Kate and I just spent about half an hour talking about some of the news stories of the day, including TKO in Saudi Arabia officially announcing their new boxing league, Cora Jade's injury on NXT, Carmella, the former Carmella, I should say, her comments on her WWE exit on an upcoming podcast, Natalya being announced for GCW and NWA shows, as well as AEW's deal with Prime Video. So do check that edition of the show out for members of the Post Wrestling Cafe if you're not considered joining, because not only will you get XL editions of Rewind of Raw, Dynamite, and Rewind of SmackDown, this coming Thursday, tomorrow, actually, you are going to be getting a review of Queen of the Ring with our Queens of the Ring, Kate from Montreal and Karen Peterson themselves.
I've been a busy girl this week.
Oh, yeah. You have. Yeah. So you've already seen this movie. You've actually recorded this review. We've heard Karen Peterson's excellent interview with two of the stars on Monday. Care to give us a little bit of a snapshot or preview about your thoughts on this movie?
What I will say is that if you go with the time-honored Siskel and Ebert system of evaluating movies, this one got one thumbs up and one thumbs down.
All right. Who put the thumbs up and who put the thumbs down? I'm very curious. So honestly, Kate, you know, I'm curious to hear the thoughts about the movie. I'm also curious to hear you and Karen together do another podcast. So looking forward to that.
We haven't since the G1. So this was a lot of fun.
So looking forward to that tomorrow in the Post Wrestling Cafe. Also out in the morning on the Post Wrestling Cafe. Actually, this will be a free show we're previewing for people. Actually, I'm going to put this out in the afternoon because this will be out on the free show. Anyway, MCU later returns talking about Daredevil Born Again. Rich Van WH Park will are actually just in the middle of recording their review right now, talking about the first two episodes of Daredevil's return return in the MCU, technically, yes, but return to series form. The episodes just dropped on Disney Plus. Rich and WH are going to talk to you guys all about it. So a free edition of that show on the free feeds out tomorrow as well. I encourage everybody to check out WH Park and myself talking about Dune. Are you a Dune fan, Kate?
Okay, say no more. I have not caught up on recent Dune. I was a Dune fan of the books in my youth. And
okay.
I still kind of remember the David Lynch version being formative to me in I think good and bad ways. But yeah, I'm very glad to see it, I would say, getting a more developed treatment than it's gotten before.
Very okay, interesting. I'm wondering if you give a thumbs up or a thumbs down to a modern day Dune, but you can listen to me and WH talk about
thumbs
it.
Up. Yeah.
WH definitely gives it as many thumbs up as he has, because the man is one of the biggest Dune fans I think in existence right now. So
as many thumbs up as he has. Does he have a lot of thumbs? Like,
thumbs
are they all his?
He only has He only has thumbs. Okay. He has no fingers, only thumbs. Okay. The conversation just got really weird. Anyway, check out that review, Post Wrestling Cafe, right now. Okay. Let's move on to talking about tonight's edition of AEW Dynamite here. We are doing a, this is another double taping edition, Kate, from Sacramento, California, the Sacramento Memorial Auditorium, where WrestleTix announced as of 7:30 p.m. this evening, 2,777 tickets out, which is close to a sellout, if not an outright one. Well, I saw a few empty seats, but very close to a sellout. Looked absolutely really great on camera, a beautiful concert hall type of auditorium. Did you have any thoughts on the venue tonight?
I continue to love their decision to go to smaller and more interesting venues. And the only thing I will say about this is I wish that they had set this one up as they have other shows with the hard cam facing the entrance, because it was beautiful. Yes, you got a sense of what the venue looked like, but it was pretty. It warranted being on TV the whole time.
Yeah, absolutely gorgeous in their wide shots, and I think this has just been working out really well. You know, them I don't see them like suffering any sort of like negative press from, you know, running smaller venues. Like, in fact, I think it's been largely positive, and at least in terms of on-screen presentation. So, all right, we start things off here with MJF. He's outside in the streets of Sacramento, and he directly speaks to Hangman Page. He says, "You provoke the devil. If you want to find me, I'm in the streets of Sacramento." And as he ramps up the intensity, he says, "You want to talk about buckshot? I've got a bullet that reads Hangman on it. And if you want to shoot cowboy, well, then let's saddle up and fight." So a very intense MJF promo to start the show, with more to come on this later. We start things off proper in arena with the contract signing for Ricochet and Swerve Strickland's match at Revolution. So Ricochet comes out. He does not have the robe with him, just a suit and a backwards Eagles cap. He says, "Don't worry about where the robe is. He's just getting some upgrades," meaning I think he's been doing some tailoring with his scissors.
Oh, yeah.
Kate. So we shall see. I'm looking forward to that. Ricochet says that for this contract signing, Swerve doesn't have to worry about his house being burnt down. He reminds Swerve that he started all of this by mocking him, and he still lost to Ricochet after all of that. So he says he's one step closer to being AEW champ. He's focused on Mox, he's focused on Cope, and he's focused on being what he's supposed to be, and that's AEW champion. Swerve comes back and says he started this to expose Ricochet for the fraud that he is, and that's what he's going to do. He says the biggest mistake Ricochet made was to leave Swerve breathing, and he's going to breathe down his neck when he ends him on Sunday. He says after Sunday, he'll only be remembered for two things: when Swerve briefly revived his career, and also for his ring announcer wife. At this point, Swerve turns his back. Ricochet goes to stab him with the golden scissors, but Swerve is ready, blocks it before taking out his own scissors to stab Ricochet in the head. And Ricochet is cut open with a little bit of blood that I'm expecting a lot more of at the actual pay-per-view itself. So your thoughts on this opening segment, Kate?
My mind continues to be boggled by the fact that Ricochet is going toe-to-toe with Swerve promos. I thought they were both very good here. This has been a really intense build-up. I hope that they have plans for both men going forward, because I'm greatly enjoying this Ricochet heel turn. And of course, you always want to see Swerve. I think Swerve is going to be near the top of the card for some time to come. But very curious to see where they go for this and what the roadmap is for both men coming out of it, because I think that they both feel much hotter coming off the back of this, no matter who wins.
Really looking forward to seeing what he's done with the robe. You know, I can only imagine. Has he turned it into a tank top, perhaps?
No.
Maybe a nice vest, you know? So I'm looking forward to that. A very good segment here, I thought, to heat up already like a very well-built feud, you know, one of the very good builds for many of the matches actually on this pay-per-view. And we will preview the whole card a little bit later on. Our first match is the Murder Machines and Brian Keith and Mark Davis teaming up, taking on Will Ospreay, Powerhouse Hobbs, Mark Briscoe, and Orange Cassidy. So a bit of a Learning Tree Callous Family combo versus a bunch of baby faces here. And the faces take turns doing 10 punches to Brian Cage in the corner. And of course, when Orange tags in, he does one punch. Heels beat on Cassidy through the commercial as Callis gets in on the action behind the ref's back. We get a hot tag to Hobbs, who beats down the entire heel group by himself. He works some nice double team spots with Orange Cassidy, including an elbow drop off of his shoulders for a two count. Ospreay comes in, cheeky Nando's to Keith for a two count. Everybody comes in at this point, and Archer just goes to the outside to grab a chair before Briscoe palm strikes it into his head, doing his big somersault dive off of it into the floor. Ozcutter and Hidden Blade is delivered to Brian Keith before the faces get the victory here in what I thought was a very strong match that had, you know, certainly like a bit of a house show feel, Kate, you know, mm-hmm. That's not a bad thing at all. Like, that's all to say that it was fun and the action was good. Kind of followed the New Japan playbook before, like, a big.
That's
big
exactly what I was thinking of. They love to do this sort of pairing up of people from different feuds, and we'll see it again later in the show. This one, I thought maybe a little slow to get out of the gate, but boy, it picked up a lot. Some really fun spots. I thought all of them looked good. In particular, I would say Hobbs feels like a much bigger deal since he's come back. Like, he's getting much hotter reactions. And once again, I think like there needs to be a path for him to get further up in the card. I think it feels like they are taking him more seriously than they have before. The problem always with AEW, is, especially now that Rampage is gone, is you've got 4 hours of television a week and a lot of very talented people fighting for those spots. But right now, Hobbs has a lot of excitement around him. So when you can put him in there with Will Ospreay and he's getting similar reactions, that's a very good sign. And how did we go this entire match without anyone on commentary making an apples and oranges joke about Brian Keith and Cassidy?
That's the next feud. They're waiting for All In to do that match. Mm-hmm. Apples versus oranges. Excellent. Yeah, I think Hobbs has been certainly living up to like this sort of enhanced spotlight that he's received. It's just all about like giving him the big feud to really cement him. Yeah. And again, like you said, finding that airtime, finding that spot when there are so many people looking to fight for it, including Kyle Fletcher, who comes out here and just looking like, like he found Randy Orton's bottle of baby oil here.
It gets the resemblance, the similarity seems to get greater every week.
Yeah. But, you know, clearly, like, just looking at the man's physique, okay, we saw over the past year Fletcher certainly increase in size. He was in his bulking phase, and now he's certainly in his no carb eating phase. Mm-hmm. Okay, because the man is shredded. He comes out here and Mark Davis first snatches a choke on Ospreay as Fletcher comes out, and Fletcher beats on Ospreay. Davis starts to pull him off as if to say, don't go that far. So Fletcher yells at Davis, telling him to do as he's told. Fletcher commands Davis to hit Ospreay with the chair, and Davis does so as the fans chant, you sold out. Fletcher mm-hmm. follows up with a brain buster onto an unfolded chair to Ospreay to take us to the pay-per-view, or at the very least collision before the match against these between these two on Sunday.
Yeah, I thought, I wasn't sure how much people would get into this sort of Mark Davis feeling a bit conflicted. They really did tonight. Like, you got the sense that people were aware of their history as a tag team and that it did have some meaning. It may vary from one place to another. I think that with New Japan doing a lot of appearances in California, maybe the audience there is a little more educated as to their past, but I was surprised that it got as much of a reaction as it did. But remember when we were reviewing Grand Slam Australia, and I remember saying something like the sort of companionship, the cooperation between Ospreay and Kenny Omega seemed a little more to come from the Ospreay side. So as Ospreay's getting the crap beaten out of him by the Don Callis family, it's a little telling that Omega did not come to his rescue.
Though Kenny was never shown to be in arena tonight.
No, but just he could have been. I don't know. Maybe they couldn't afford to bring him in because he's too tariffed.
Oh, interesting. Don't want to get into that yet. Okay, on the show, Kate. I think Fletcher just continues to evolve. Fletcher is looking outstanding here, more and more comfortable in this sort of like main character role. I'm liking the storyline with Davis. I think it's a good choice of story for him to give him something that's a bit more of a prominent role than just like sidekick to Will Ospreay, for instance. Though I do kind of want to know a little bit more detail about like what is exactly is keeping Davis within the Callis family and following these orders. I know he signed a contract or what, Fletcher like had power of attorney or something and signed Davis to the contract. But why exactly, like what exactly is keeping this professional wrestler from breaking the contract? I would assume money, but why is money that important for this guy that he's willing to do it? Like, I just want a bit more exposition about what he's actually fighting for. You know, does he have a, I don't know, like a child? Does he have like a sick family member that he's like doing all of this for that's forcing him against his will to do all of this stuff? I think that would just help us feel a little bit more sympathy for Mark Davis.
Agreed. I'm wondering if they're holding off on that until after the Ospreay match. Because it definitely requires a bit more explanation. He's never looked convinced. And it could be as simple as he still feels some loyalty to Kyle Fletcher.
Mm-hmm. We get a very good video package hyping up Takeshita versus Omega, showing some footage from DDT. Omega telling us about Takeshita being his young boy back then and reiterating how Takeshita was specifically chosen by Callis to replace Kenny as a way to hurt him personally, given their personal connection. So they take us through some of their history in AEW with Takeshita pinning Omega All In, pinning him again 6 days later at All Out. But Kenny says none of that matters. He says whoever holds the international championship is the best. So I also appreciate them just giving more video package time to these sort of things. Yeah. You know, they used
particularly going into a pay-per-view, like you want to hit that very hard. And lately, their go-home shows, both Dynamite and Collision, have tended to be fairly heavy on the video packages.
They used to just, like, at the very least, like, either, like, at worst, only air them on their countdown shows, or at the most, like, cut them down to, like, what, like a 30-second version of the actual.
Yeah.
This felt like a pretty substantial, like, full version of it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you'll get an even longer version, perhaps, on the countdown, which airs after Collision on Saturday. Our next match is Wheeler Yuta taking on Cope. And Yuta is walking out in full gear without, I guess, Pac taking over for Pac here. Coming out in full gear, walking out from the outside of the arena. A bit warmer in Sacramento, I assume, than Buffalo, where Jey Uso walked out in full gear as well. So early, unlike the tone of the feud, these two work a more traditional technical style. They're both just trying to one up, the other using wrestling, using holds. Both of them, I thought, looking great at it. During a commercial, Cope lands on his surgically repaired leg wrong, allowing Yuta to take control through the commercial break. Yuta goes for cattle mutilation, but Cope escapes and locks in the crossface. He goes for the spear, but Yuta meets him with the Busaiku knee first. Then he locks in the cattle mutilation, but Cope escapes. Cope goes for a spear. Yuta leapfrogs, but Cope goes for it again, and this time he hits it, defeating Wheeler Yuta in what I thought was a really good, surprisingly clean technical match. Going to get to your thoughts, but I'll just mention the post-match here, because Cope grabs Yuta's hand to shake it, saying, "This is what respect feels like." And he just leaves, does not try to concerto him. Instead, he seems to be playing the psychological game, trying to turn Wheeler Yuta on Mox by being good guy, good cop, rather than using by force. What did you think about the match and the post-match?
I thought a really strong match is the kind of match that Yuta does very well. I think that he is at his base a technical wrestler, and just allowing him to show that off was good, but also it fed into the way that the match ended. Which I really liked this, because Copeland has he has just destroyed Claudio and Pac with the concertos. He's been really brutal, but this idea that Yuta, in order to take him out of the equation, is more susceptible to psychological manipulation rather than just outright violence is a good one, because on AEW we've seen that sort of psychological manipulation work on Yuta before. It's how he ended up with the Blackpool Combat Club. It's how he ended up with the Death Riders. He is someone who is influenced by older and more established wrestlers, and it did appear to work here. Will that last? I don't know. Probably not. But it was a moment that felt sensible to me. It felt like, yeah, okay, I can see where this works in story.
Afterwards, Mox comes out. He's pissed off at Yuta and just slaps Yuta around. The crowd is feeling sympathy for Yuta here, and they're chanting for him as Yuta pie faces Mox before leaving. So afterwards, we follow Mox to the back where he cuts a promo, and he tells Copeland, "Well, you did it. You left me all alone, but the bars were there for your safety, Cope. Now you got me alone, and I'm going to enjoy every second of beating your ass. In this business, there is no respect. You get respect one way, by showing people you're willing to pull the trigger. You've pulled the trigger on me 3 times, but I only have to pull it once." What does he mean by "you pulled it on me 3 times, Kate?
I'm guessing that he means taking out each of the Death Riders is pulling the trigger on him, because that is exactly what he said it was. It was a way of taking out Moxley's support system.
So not including Yuta. Not including Yuta, because that would make...
Oh, I think it was. Like, I think that he recognizes that this was a way of removing Yuta.
But that's 4.
Oh, yeah.
He delivered 3 concertos. Okay, so maybe we can assume the pulls were only via concerto. I mean... I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't really counting Marina in that. But
true.
Look, right. She's interfered as much as anyone, so it probably should. So maybe not counting Yuta.
Okay.
What I always think I couldn't help thinking was his line about there is no respect in this business and no one seems to realize that except me. I couldn't help but think, wow, that is such a good kind of raison d'etre for his current personality and for the existence of the Death Riders. Why are we getting this now rather than 3 months ago? Like, that actually would have been so much better than months of vaguely sinister but not really not really substantial promos. Like, yeah, if his idea is, screw it, there's no respect, you do whatever you have to get ahead, and I'm going to screw everyone over. Yeah, that makes sense. I can get behind that, rather than this whole, oh, I believe in AEW, I want to remake it in my image. This was much stronger to me. Now, what I will say is that this program with Copeland is as focused and as strong as I've seen the Death Riders group be. I actually put more of that on Copeland than anything else, but I think it's helped. However, I can't help but think there are so many matches on the card that I'm more excited. And this has to main event. It's your world title. It's just like, am I as excited for this as I am for Ricochet versus Swerve? Definitely not. Am I more excited for this than I am for MJF versus Hangman? Nope. For Kyle Fletcher versus Ospreay in a cage? Not close. For Omega versus Takeshita? I don't care if I've seen Omega versus Takeshita a couple times. I'm super excited for that. So you're talking about your world title match being, if you're lucky, maybe the 5th strongest match on your pay-per-view. That's not a good statement.
This story certainly has the most baggage attached to it of really any of them. And like, honestly, that just means that what they started with wasn't really meant all that favorably. And that's unfortunate because, you know, they spent a lot of time on it and haven't really gotten it to a place that people are necessarily excited. They're excited to see the story end more than anything. But I will say, I think like this current cycle with Cope, they've done a good job of basically just either ignoring some of the sort of like bigger themes that I think we were trying to start this whole thing off with and just focusing on just this feud and the very sort of easy to understand story of Copeland hunting down each member of the Death Riders. So to that end, I thought this was successful. I'm very curious to hear your prediction for this that we will, of course, talk about a little bit later on.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Coming up this month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Kate from Montreal and Karen Peterson are getting together for a review of the new film Queen of the Ring, based on the Jeff Lean book. Plus, Rewind Away tackles the 2021 film Dune, Daredevil Born Again, covered by W.H. Park and Rich Fan. Plus, we've got Collision Course, Post Pro Res, and your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Join now, postwrestlingcafe.com.
And we get our Outrunners training montage, Kate, ahead of their match against the Hurt Business. Old, grainy, like 4x3 quality video with, again, just a song. It is keyed as a song from 1987 called You Are Not Alone. This was so fucking awesome. I thought
these guys are doing like infinite home runs, and who would have seen that coming?
Yeah. And just credit to whoever was the producer of this one. I thought they just kind of hit that tone perfectly. And
if you
had any question about whether or not like this act should be in this pay-per-view match, I feel like this alone, at least like garnered enough enjoyment out of me to want to see them like have this match on the pay-per-view. So that is the match.
I think that a lot of us were surprised that the Outrunners made it in here above the Murder Machines, but I was kind of looking forward to Murder Machines versus the Hurt Syndicate. Not going to lie.
And you'll get it eventually.
Yeah. But yeah. This is just so, if you're trying to portray the Hurt Syndicate as heels, this is absolutely the way to go, more than any other team in the entire company. Like, these guys are just these very lovable baby faces. They are funny. And there's a sense of, you know, they're not going to win, but you're still pulling for them. And this video, dead on the money. If you had told me that this was actually a song from 1987, I wouldn't have been able to dispute that, really. They've got this, the look, the sound, everything just down to a science.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see in this match. Obviously, the Outrunners are going to be huge baby faces, but it's another interesting match where you can see the Hurt Syndicate go back and forth, you know, depending on who their opponents are, between being baby faces and being heels. So I'm curious to see how they work that.
That's really the way to present them. I think that's always been the strength of the Hurt Syndicate, is their defining characteristic is that they're cool, not that they're good guys or bad guys.
So MJF is with is still in the streets of Sacramento, which is really just outside of this arena. He's with Renee, and MJF is about to cut a promo on Paige before in comes the EV pickup truck with the horns here. Paige is about to run these two over. MJF is running into the arena as Paige chases him down and starts beating on MJF in the arena until it's revealed that it's a decoy MJF. They've had a really good decoy, I have to say, you know?
Yeah, until I saw his face, I did not realize. And like helped by the way it was shot, that it's in continuous motion. But this guy, like, they picked someone, same hair, same stature. And so, yeah, it was a genuine surprise.
So MJF at this point starts beating up on Paige from behind, and Paige fights him off, goes for the buckshot, but MJF catches him with a low blow and then a heat seeker before revealing a shirt that reads, "MJF did nothing wrong." He nails Paige with the dynamite diamond ring, and then he grabs the mic, says, "You people love when Paige burns things. Let's see how you like it when I do it." So he grabs lighter fluid to pour on Paige before security steps in to pull him away. as MJF screams, "Let me prove my point." So MJF is trying to cremate Hangman Page in order to prove a point, and I guess that point being Page is a bad guy and you should not be cheering for him because you guys are hypocrites.
This has been MJF's best feud in God knows how long, since before he lost the title. And that is all driven by the fact that he has not at all gone for this low-hanging fruit, the sort of smooth your mama jokes that he had been relying on too much. And give me more of this MJF, just the fierce guy who's trying to suppress the fact that he's pretty much a sociopath. Him being carried out and screaming, "Let me prove my point," and airing what I think we can agree is a pretty reasonable grievance, that this guy set someone's house on fire, and like, you didn't like him when his house was invaded and you liked him when he set someone's house on fire. That's screwed up. And he has he's in the right here, but that the audience doesn't care. And so very happy to see the kind of resuscitated MJF. Both of these guys, I think, were always in the world title picture wherever they were. But again, we know that there's a number one contenders match coming up, but these two are right behind whoever gets that distinction.
Yeah, it is very interesting thinking, like, in retrospect, how burning a man's childhood home down made him suddenly just so much more likable. And I guess MJF lighting Paige on fire would not have made him more likable.
Or would it?
Yeah. We like
it. We are screwed up people. We're very, very bad people.
Very screwed up. Of course, speaking about Queen of the Ring, we have Lexi Nair in the back with Ash Avildsen, who is, of course, the director of Queen of the Ring. He starts the interview off, like, I think very plain, you know, like he starts the interview off kind of talking about it without any sort of charisma whatsoever, almost like a hockey player. And then in comes one of the stars, or at least one. Would you say star of Queen of the Ring?
I would not.
Okay.
Featured guest performer. She is in a few scenes and has two or three lines.
One of the guests of Queen of the Ring, Timeless Toni Storm, comes in. She calls him Mr. DeMille. I'm assuming as in Cecil B. DeMille.
Indeed.
Okay. A director who died in 1959.
Also known for directing Sunset Boulevard, the last line of which, as the insane old star is taken away by police. Oh, shit. Spoiler alert. For the movie released in 1950.
I was just about to
The very it. Last line is, "Thank you, Mr. DeMille. I'm ready for my close-up."
That's why we have you here, Kate. Toni promotes the movie in character and says her only regret is that her gratuitous nude scene was cut out. And then Ash Avildsen comes back, this time totally in character, speaking with an accent. Now, did Cecil B. DeMille have an accent?
No, not.
So
not
this was like some
this, no.
some timeless Ash Avildsen. Okay, suddenly starts speaking.
There's
in an accent.
To this though, that Toni transforms the people who are around her. Which
right? Does she have that superpower? So this director now speaks totally in character and says, "Darling, it's a PG-13 picture, and the scene may or may not be in his private collection on Mulholland Drive." Okay. Storm starts promoting the May match at Revolution and then says, "Chin up, tits out, and watch for the Queen of the Ring in theaters on Friday." This is how you do product placement. I thought this was fantastic. Oh.
I thought Avildsen was very charming here, like, yes, both yes. in his regular sort of polite, "I'm here to promote my film," and then just the immediate change when she comes into the picture.
Yeah. And I guess the only wrestler on AEW TV we're going to be hearing from talking about this movie.
I guess so. Yeah. Although they've promoted it a bit. Interesting thing, which you'll hear about in the review that Karen and I did, Ash Avildsen has a cameo appearance as Vince McMahon Sr. in the film. What?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
In his own film. He just a very brief appearance playing Vince McMahon Sr.
Okay, well, after seeing this little portion on Dynamite, and that kind of has me more curious. Up next, maybe the people's main event of this edition of Dynamite, Kate, okay? The most talked about feud over the past week, not John Cena turning heel. It is Thunder Rosa teaming with Chris Statlander, taking on Megan Bain and Penelope Ford, the match that has the world talking, okay? Bain, let's start things off here. Bain throws everyone on the outside, including her own partner, as we go to break. Statlander comes in with a great hot tag. Great timing, I thought, with Ford here, going for a handspring back elbow and Stat moving away at the last second, so Ford ends up connecting with Bain instead. We get some double-team offense from Statlander and Rosa. Ford pulls Stat off the turnbuckle, which somehow takes her out for the rest of the match. Rosa then tries to fight off the two-on-one, but eventually succumbs to Bane's F5, which the announcers now call Fate's Descent, to get the win. So what did you think about this match and... I guess
this might have been the hardest hitting match on the entire show. I thought that all four of them looked great. Was a little surprised to see Rosa being the one taking the pin, since I thought maybe she was the one who could least afford it. I'm wondering after last week if they may parlay this into a Rosa heel turn, because she's had a rough ride. But these four women are. This match is a perfect reason why you need a stronger women's mid-card away from the titles, because you can't just go wasting talent like this. I find that Penelope, since she's come back, has looked, if anything, better than she was before she left. Megan is obviously just a force of nature. Statlander continues to get better. And I thought that this was one of Rosa's better matches since she came back. I have not really participated in the discourse about that whole the chair spot with Rosa. To me, sometimes wires get crossed. I don't see anything more in it than that, and it was unfortunate. I'm glad that they were able to shift and do this match as a kind of a make good. And yeah, this left me wanting to see more of every single one of these women on TV. I think, of course, Megan looks like more of the project right now, but yeah, I like seeing the pairings for both. Stylander, I think, always, like, because there's always the sort of, are we going to get some sort of new wave of her and Willow, which, that's hanging
in the
background.
That's still unresolved, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and... I have, anyone who listens to Collision Course knows that I have been advocating for this for a while. Not to introduce women's tag belts, but to do a tournament the way that they did back in, I think it was 2020 or 2021, because it's a very good way of dedicating a bit more time. Like, you can still do it with like one or two matches per show. And you're going to get so many more women on TV. And that in itself will get people excited for the division. I think belts are hard to justify because you don't have enough of a story behind them. But a tournament like that has potential.
We go up next in the back with Renee with Mercedes Moné. They do mention Momo Watanabe's match with Serena Deeb coming up on Saturday, mm-hmm. which they're taping right now, and says Moné says Serena will break Momo for her. So, and then she gets Renee to do her catchphrase. So,
I was glad that at least they mentioned that Mercedes has defeated Momo before, because it seemed like they were kind of skirting around that.
Yeah. Otherwise, like, I mean, I'm guessing they just kind of need whatever story, plot to get people into the match as they can. They're obviously handicapped in some ways with a lack of exposure for Momo Watanabe on AEW television proper, and just really an inability to, I guess, like, tell a deeper story with infrequent appearances and limited language. But that's kind of all you – I mean – you're promising a hot match on a pay-per-view between Mobo Watanabe and Mercedes Moné, and that's kind of all we need at this point.
That's what you need. I think that you need to do a video package on Saturday, and I think they will, with her being on the show. The other thing is that whether or not people know Momo, I think there's a wider number of people who know that women's wrestling in Japan is pretty far advanced. So just having a Japanese wrestler come on the show to fight Mercedes is in itself, I'm not saying this like rockets to the top of the card, not by a long shot, but it is interesting enough to justify its place on the card.
And we wait to see if there's any sort of Billy Starks interaction at some point, whether on Saturday or on Saturday.
There's a long game being played there.
Yep. As you discussed on Collision Course on Saturday, of course. So we go up next to the Max Caster Open Challenge here. So Max he's trying to get people to chant, "Let's go, Max, you're the best wrestler alive." And says there's a reason they call this Sacktown is because you're all a bunch of ball bags. And I know, like, this gimmick is kind of like him, like, being intentionally awful and, like, really not witty at all. Like, for the guy who used to be the witty rapper, he's just, like, not at all now. And I get that that's sort of the gimmick, but I don't think it really comes across as that. I think it just kind of comes across as just, like, something that doesn't belong on TV. And so this week, Jay White answers the open challenge, and White comes out, hits the Blade Runner immediately. That's it. Max goes to the back. Jay White grabs the microphone and says he and Cope have had each other's back since World's End, and at Revolution he will see the new AEW world champion, Cope. So he's definitely turning on Cope, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. But is he doing it at Revolution? I almost feel like they made this so obvious that it's not going to happen. I mean, it's Jay White, you know, the heel turn is in the mail. It's just to lay it on that thick, I think, is a red herring.
Interesting. We go up next to a sit-down interview Renee did with Mariah May and Toni Storm. And this is supposed to be a, what do they call it, no physicality sit-down. And so they start things off here with May getting up and spitting into Tony's face. Tony does not sell for it. She just accepts it and continues the whole segment with the saliva somewhere, and this just sets Renee off. She tells May she's delusional and that she's the one who started all of this. May says that you and that title are nothing without me, and they're going to go to hell together. She says, isn't this what you always wanted, a trilogy with your greatest co-star? We can have the Hollywood ending we always dreamt of. And Storm comes back and says, you don't deserve the dignity of death. I sentence you to a lifetime of mediocrity. People will like you, but they will never love you. When people ask in the future, whatever happened to Mariah May, they'll say that she found out what happens when you try to kill God. So this felt like a go-home segment for these two. Maybe they'll still have something on Saturday, but what are your thoughts on this particular segment and maybe the build thus far?
I think that I wasn't really keen on seeing them run this back, but it does need a big finale, and this is absolutely the place to do it. I thought that everyone, Renee included, did a great job here. I thought the idea that Mariah has been broken by this loss in the same way that Tony was broken by her losses, by both of her losses, is an interesting one. I don't foresee Mariah winning this, but I think it's going to be a pretty wild match. The thing is, I thought that they told very important truths here. Mariah is correct when she says that Tony's ascent to the level that she's achieved was driven by her partnership and then rivalry with Mariah. Her reign, as much as I think people liked the Timeless Tony character, it was that connection with Mariah that made it huge and turned it into a really great story. However, Tony is also correct in saying that women who have lost the AEW world title have tended to fade into obscurity other than Tony, who had managed to reinvent herself. If you think there isn't a single woman who has held the AW title who feels as important as they did at the moment when they were the champion, like Rio, Nyla Rose, Hikaru Shida, Britt Baker, even Thunder Rose is probably the strongest one at this point. And even she is considerably lower than where she was. Yes, that part of that's driven by injury. Same thing with Jamie Hayter, but they are not at that level. Only Tony has managed to kind of redeem herself and make herself feel much larger. So she's not wrong when she says that there's a very good chance that Mariah simply fades from view once Tony is done with her. So, yeah, very, very strong on all fronts. And again, yeah, Renee just at the end sort of going like, I just pray that you don't really hurt each other was an effective way to close the segment.
Yeah, if this is the end of this feud, like I'm already looking forward to someday, like listening to maybe the behind the scenes featurette mm-hmm. on the making of this particular movie, because I feel like they're operating on sort of like a brainstorming level, you know, obviously along with like Tony Khan and RJ City at a level that's very unique to this particular program that other wrestling programs are not shared. So I'm very curious to see, like, to hear about the genesis and the making of this, if we ever get that. So that is coming up, of course, on Sunday. Our main event tonight is Swerve and Brody King taking on Ricochet and Okada. King, of course, faces Okada on Sunday at Revolution, and Swerve will face Ricochet. So Ricochet comes out with a big Band-Aid on his head from the scissor stabbing, and they start off fighting around the ring with King holding on to both heels over his shoulders, setting up a Swerve stomp off the apron onto the both of them. The heels beat on Swerve through the break as the crowd is chanting, "We want Brody." Brody tags in and just gets this incredible reaction for all of his spots. A healthy Swerve then tags in as Ricochet wants to tag out, but Okada is not there. Ricochet then eats the house call and then a Swerve stomp, but Okada breaks the pin with an elbow. Then we get a preview of King and Okada. Okada brings his belt in. Ricochet uses it on Swerve, and Ricochet ends up pinning Swerve to lead to Sunday's match. I thought a very good main event here, and the California crowd gave Brody King a massive reaction. So you have to expect the same, if not bigger, when we get to his actual hometown of Los Angeles this Sunday.
I think it kind of comes together well that you have both a storyline reason and a logistical reason to have Brody King taking on Okada. The storyline reason, of course, that Okada fought and injured his partner, Buddy Matthews. The logistical reason being that Brody King is from California, will get a massive reaction. So I came together very quickly, but I like it. And of course, Ricochet versus Swerve is going to be huge. As I said on Collision Course, I think the biggest challenge with Swerve versus Ricochet is going to be not allowing it to telegraph the ending of the main event, because you do have a very clear babyface, a very clear heel in both matches. So you have to think whoever wins, the opposite goes for the main event. I feel like Swerve is going to take this one, but it's not. I mean, Ricochet's very hot right now as a heel, so that is not out of the question. But do I think Cope is going to win? Can't really see it, but we'll see how it goes. Yeah, this match was a lot of fun. I think it's so funny how every time Swerve pairs with someone, he seems to come up with one just great, like, spectacular move that he does that relies on him, like, working with his partner. In this case, the double Swerve stomp off Brody King's shoulders. He used to have one of these with Keith Lee, where he'd sort of use Lee as basically leverage to do do a crossbody, and yeah, like, he works very well with everybody. I think Brody versus Okada feels like a pretty hot match coming out of this. What more could you ask?
I thought it was a really solid go-home edition of Dynamite ahead of the pay-per-view. And it helps that it's a really strong card on paper that I'd like to maybe take some time to go through, maybe give some predictions as well with you here, Kate. So let's preview AEW Revolution 2025. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling. At the moment, it's a 10-match card with likely more to be announced, at least for the Zero Hour. So let's start things off, actually, this time a little bit differently from the top, perhaps. And we're going to start things off talking about Jon Moxley versus Cope. This one, I think, is tough to predict, given a lot of audience dissatisfaction with the Death Riders storyline. I can see Tony listening to it and wanting to change course, but also mainly for me, the prospect of Christian Cage holding on to
hovering in the background,
the contract and seeing him cashing it in on Mox doesn't really make much sense, but cashing in on Cope obviously makes all the sense in the world. So can that be an element? Jay White is also there. What do you expect, Kate?
Kind of suspect Mox to retain because I feel I don't know if Cope is the guy to dethrone him. And I guess particularly now that you do seem to be getting a little momentum behind the Death Riders, but yeah, there is absolutely an appetite for this to be gone. And Christian, he has not been on TV in a few weeks, and that does feel deliberate at this point. Like, you're supposed to be forgetting that he exists, which none of us are. And Christian already took the TNT title off Cope in exactly this fashion, cashing in a guaranteed title shot that he had.
At the very least, what's your official pick? Okay. Mox?
I'm going to say Mox.
I could definitely see the tease, right? For even the tease to take place, I think Cope actually has to win. For me, I'm going to choose Cope for this one. And the question is whether or not he leaves the pay-per-view with it, or if we get the tease of the cash-in and somehow Cope is able to thwart it so that he escapes with the actual championship. Because I could see like Tony maybe wanting to actually build up to the actual match between the two. I also think like he'll probably want Cope to hold the championship for at least a decent amount of time.
Yeah.
Now let's also remember, like, maybe the ultimate sort of destination for this Death Riders thing is maybe for a Darby versus Jon Moxley. Well, Moxley can still win the championship back and continue this campaign at some point.
That's true.
And you know, but it doesn't mean that you can't have people take it from him in the meantime. And I think Cope is one of those guys that I could see doing that. The Jay White element kind of makes things a little bit interesting. Can we see Jay White helping Cope or preventing him in this sort of scenario? What do you see?
Here's another wrench in the works. The removal of all of Moxley's henchmen.
With the exception of Yuta, who's still maybe healthy. That's a maybe, yeah.
Now, who in particular has had an issue with Yuta in the last couple of months is Jay White. So I could see Yuta actually deciding to come back and help Mox. And yes, Jay intervening to take on Yuta again. The other thing, though, is that someone losing all of their henchmen is very often a ruse to introduce a new member. Who could that be? Got no idea, but that is a real possibility.
Could it be Jay White?
It could be White. The thing with White is,
but he's already in a faction.
Yeah, I feel though. Also, two things. I feel he's too good of a promo to kind of be buried behind Mox. I mean, that is always his strength. The other thing with Jay and why I don't necessarily see him turning is, I think the appearances of Gabe Kidd and Clark Connors are perhaps pointing towards a Bullet Club versus J faction, whatever form that takes for Forbidden Door.
Very interesting. Okay. So let's move down the card here. And we've got at least, this is not the official schedule or anything, but in my graphics, at least, I got MJF versus Hangman Page. I've really enjoyed this build. K, Kate. You know, these two, as you mentioned in our review, one of MJF's best feuds, I have to say, like, in at least a year, if not longer. No blemishes, in my opinion, at all, like, in the interactions between these two. Hangman has continued to be in this sort of transition to becoming a full-on babyface after, you know, whatever he's been doing earlier this year. I think it's been very successful, and Paige feels like one of the hottest guys in the entire company right now. Certainly has that main character type of aura attached to him. Yeah. You could say as much as maybe a Will Ospreay or a Swerve Strickland. What are your thoughts on this particular match?
I think Hangman takes this one because at this point there is a lot of background noise that whatever the build was with Darby and Mox, and that clearly seemed to be the direction. Not 100% sure why, given that Darby was going to be off TV for a few months. In the absence of Darby Allin, I feel like a lot of fans have moved on that Hangman's the one they want to see the title, take the title off Mox. So I think that in order to get him up to that level, that is, that he needs to win this one. Now, if he is the guy to take the title off Moxley, there is every reason to run this back with the title on the line.
Yeah, it makes things interesting because we know the winner of Ricochet and Swerve will be up next to challenge. And again, like, not knowing the sort of world title situation and how that's going to unfold might have some effect on, like, who you might choose for this one as well. Mm-hmm. If Paige is somebody that you're trying to push to, like, be hot enough to challenge for a championship, maybe not at the next pay-per-view, but the pay-per-view after, that makes sense. But I would argue, like, MJF is sort of in need of, like, that big win, too. Mm-hmm. I can see this feud continuing beyond this program. And for that to happen,
Hangman is the master of the three-match arc.
Yeah, yeah. And for that to happen, I think the heel should take the first one, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Do you expect Fire to be a part of this match after today's angle?
I mean, it's always a threat. The fact that they did put it right out there, and with Hangman, you're dealing with someone who usually has at least one psychotic bit during all of his matches. I think it's possible. It's possible that the match gets called when someone gets set on fire, and that therefore the ending's a little unresolved.
Okay, we shall see. We got Konosuke Takeshita taking on Kenny Omega for the AEW International Championship. Perhaps in ring the match. It's sort of up in the air, not necessarily, but one of the matches I could say we're all looking forward to the most. Who wins this one, and what do you expect from the match itself?
As much as I feel like Kenny almost has to win the match coming back, I feel like there's more value to having him appear to be struggling and letting and having Takeshita take this one.
I agree. I totally agree. I would love Takeshita to sort of be the person that he can't beat. And who, like, Kenny Omega doesn't have one of those guys. Like, you know, Rock, like, he kind of beats everybody, or eventually beats everybody. But to have Konosuke Takeshita be the one person he can't beat, I think would be so awesome.
Yeah.
Is this going to be a match of the night?
Yes. No, let me walk that back.
I'll ask you at the end, okay? Because up next, we also have to talk about Ricochet versus Swerve Strickland, number one contenders match for the AEW World Championship. You know, we spoke a little bit about this in the actual review itself, but what is your final pick for actually who wins, and if you expect any other surprises to take place?
I think I'm going to say Swerve takes this one because I said Moxley takes the main event. So that, I think you set that up. Now, is that your program for the next pay-per-view, which is it Double or Nothing that's next?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know if you let it go that long. Look, they have a lot of dynamites that function as miniature pay-per-views. Not that I'm saying that this match isn't pay-per-view worthy, but we'll see. So I'm going to say that Swerve takes this one. I think that, someone in the chat is saying Dynasty is next.
Dynasty,
okay.
April.
So maybe that's thank you very much for the correction there. So that could be something for Dynasty. Now, I think it is just possible that when Swerve gets that title shot, it's Ricochet that screws him out of it.
Interesting. Okay. I am picking... I'm picking Ricochet for this one. And I'm picking it via Prince Nana. Well, listen, the Nana thing, is, I think, is certainly the main sort of like narrative driving force behind all of this. Can Swerve get the role back for Prince Nana? Because Prince Nana has kind of given him an ultimatum, like, you either get the role back for me or I'm done with this, right? I think there's a lot more interest in seeing Ricochet fail. Get screwed out of it, perhaps, you know, but ultimately fail to get the robe back. Robe is, I'm expecting to be destroyed here, you know, because Ricochet is making some upgrades. And I see the two breaking up, or at the very least, beginning the storyline with the two of them starting to break up.
Where I could see this going is Nana inadvertently costing Swerve this match. If you were going to go, yeah. I just said that I think Swerve is going to win, but I could also see that. This one's very, this pay-per-view has a lot of matches that could go either way.
Mm-hmm. But for this one, I think I'm going with Swerve. So we shall see what happens, and that we'll see how it leads into, like, they're connected too, of course, to the main event. So up next, we've got here, Mariah May versus Toni Storm for the AEW Women's Championship, the Hollywood ending. So sorry, clarify this. Is this like a stipulation match? Is this a false count or no DQ or anything?
Basically no rules.
Gotcha. Okay. They're in LA, the Hollywood ending match. Who wins? Who takes this?
Toni retains.
I think so too. I think May's had an amazing, amazing like evolution, but the division should be built around Toni Storm. And yeah. I just hope for a very satisfying, you know, conclusion to what has been just an amazing year-long feud between these two.
And then the question of, can Mariah May avoid falling into obscurity?
Yeah, it's very true. Well, as long as Monet has that TBS championship, I can't see May going for it, you know, unless we get a Monet babyface turn eventually. So it kind of leaves at least like May without a belt to chase. But that doesn't mean she can't have an interesting storyline, which I hope she's able to with. But then you also ask, like, who are these sort of dance partners she has? How much airtime is given, you know, to a non-belt program?
Well, the other thing with her, though, what I will say is, I think that you need to resuscitate her reasonably soon. But if this match is rough, and I think we all expect it to be, whoever loses, and we're both saying Mariah in this case, needs to be off TV for a while. But that's the fact that Toni just came back onto TV after a break is another reason why I think she's winning. I could see Mariah being out for a month or so after this match.
All right. And then up next, this is actually on, you know what, I'll go to this last because it's actually the 0 hour match. But let's talk about Will Ospreay versus Kyle Fletcher in a steel cage. Great build so far. These two have had just an excellent, excellent program. And Kyle Fletcher, I think, has just been amazing. Honestly, it's been amazing see his evolution and his dedication to this character and just to his his putting on masks, you know, and actually looking like a real main eventer. So what's the series so far? Fletcher has beaten Ospreay. Ospreay has, they 1-1?
No. They had a match, I think, one of Ospreay's very first matches on Dynamite. Right. When they were both part of the Callis family, was just Don was setting Ospreay up to fight the other members. You know, why not? We're going to make great TV. Ospreay took that one. It was a very good match. And I think
with this incarnation of Kyle Fletcher in this particular program,
the truly evil incarnation of Kyle Fletcher, you had the, I can't remember which pay-per-view it was at, but had the one.
Yeah, at World's End, the last one, it was Ospreay beating Fletcher. Full Gear was Fletcher beating Ospreay. So they are 1-1. This is the rubber match. It's in a cage. Who takes it? Damn. Who should win this one?
This is hampered by the fact that I don't see what the story is for either of them going forward. And that is not to say that it doesn't exist, because I'm sure it does. I, again, tend to think that you've got Ospreay versus Omega sort of simmering in the background eventually, which means that someone's turning heel. I'm not really sure. Or, you know, do a double babyface match. They've it's not like they've never done that before. But who can... Ospreay can absolutely absorb losses. I just don't know. Like,
at what point has he absorbed too many, though?
That's what I was going to say. Like, at some point, he's going to absorb too many, and he's going to, he's like,
yeah. Again, so much of it depends on like
his luster while he was there, and he was losing all the time.
Yeah. It also depends on, like, again, who's up next for the world title. And considering all the options that are on the table, I don't necessarily see Ospreay going for that world championship soon. Could he go, though, for the international championship that either Takeshita or Ospreay hold? Sorry, Omega. Takeshita or Omega.
I feel there is money in Ospreay versus Omega. I think we did already see Ospreay versus Takeshita. Not that I don't want to see it again, but Ospreay versus Omega 3 is going to be a big deal when it happens because of the nature of the first two matches. Yeah. So, on the other hand, Fletcher does feel like that guy, as you said, who is willing to take able to take that next step up against a babyface champion, which they don't have a lot of right now.
I'm going with Will Ospreay. I think Ospreay needs to ultimately win the feud. I think Fletcher has already gained so much, and he still has many years left to get to that status, whereas Ospreay is already there now. You need to get serious with the world title campaign for him starting now. The audience already recognizes him as that top guy, but now the booking, I think, needs to reflect it, and he needs to win ultimately this big feud. Mark Davis also being an element to all of this as well. Do we get the payoff for this particular Mark Davis storyline tonight, or does that linger beyond this?
If Davis were to turn on Fletcher and Ospreay were to win, that does open up the obvious match between Fletcher and Davis and might allow Fletcher to get a very quick win back afterwards. So, yeah, I see that. I can not fully turning, but at least maybe stopping Fletcher from doing something fine.
And then we've got Mercedes Moné versus Momo Watanabe, TBS Championship. Do you see a title change for this one?
No.
Yeah, I don't either.
Mercedes, they're already team Mercedes versus Athena, so she holds title till All In.
Expect the match to be great, though, so there we go. And then we got the Outrunners taking on the Hurt Syndicate for the AEW World Tag Team Championship. Title change?
No.
Outrunners, upset of the year?
As much as I think it would be a warm, you know, the Hurt Syndicate are the hot property right now. They're the hot tag champions that have been in a long time. So go, right. Keep going with that.
Then we got Kazuchika Okada versus Brody King to round out, I believe, all the matches on the main card, unless I might be missing one. But yeah, your thoughts on this one for the Continental Championship?
Okada retains.
Yes, Okada retains as well. Although, think about this for a second, okay? We kind of said it with Buddy Matthews. A lot of people thought that might have been a possibility, that Matthews might have won the championship in his particular hometown. You did. That's right. We're in a similar situation here, you know, where Brody King in front of a hometown crowd. If you're going to, like, have Okada lose, it should arguably be against somebody who's, like, really going to be an up-and-coming talent. And I would even say King is more a bigger candidate for that spot than Buddy Matthews was. So I don't think it would be the craziest decision in the world to make the change.
It's not. And it occurs to me that I have predicted that every single title is staying on its holders. So I feel like at least one of them has to change. I think always in the background, there is the specter of Okada versus Takeshita, which could be, if we're saying Takeshita retains, if Okada loses his belt, then going after Takeshita's is not crazy. But I think that of any of the matches that you're going to see, Okada do, aside obviously from the rematch with Omega, I think the one versus Takeshita is going to be a hugely anticipated thing.
I'm going to go with Brody King. I'm going to say that's the big shocker here. Big win for Brody King, maybe one that, you know, he'll be remembered for, but we shall see. Over to the 0 hour, we've got only announced so far, as far as I know, Big Boom AJ, Mark Briscoe, and Orange Cassidy teaming up against Johnny TV and MXM Collection. So, don't know what does it really say about it, but I hope it's fun. I hope it's fun.
Yeah. The last one was fun. The Big Boom AJ stuff is not for me. That is, I am not the target audience for this. However, getting Cassidy, I salute them for coming up with a way of getting Orange Cassidy and Mark Briscoe on the show.
What is the Venn diagram between people who understand Cecil B. DeMille references and the Big Boom AJ Costco guys references? I wonder.
Infinitesimally narrow.
Yeah. So those are our thoughts and our predictions for AEW Revolution. We have Matt Hahn in the chat who actually brings up a great point here. One other thing you should touch on is if there are any debuts with Speedball appearing. What do you think, Kate?
I think I have an idea how Speedball is debuting, and I could see it, I guess, on the 0 hour or at the very beginning of the show, which is Caster coming out to have his open challenge, and I can see Speedball being the one to answer that.
I mean the Caster thing almost seems like perfectly set up for something like that. I kind of prefer if that wasn't on the pay-per-view, to be honest with you, because I think by the end of the pay-per-view we would forget about it. So I think that'd be more impactful on the TV coming out of it or one of the TVs coming up soon.
I think that's how it's going to debut. The other thing that I could see that I almost expect to have added to the 0 hour would be some kind of CMLL showcase.
Mm. All right. So those are our thoughts on the card for Revolution so far. I will be back on Sunday right after the pay-per-view to talk about it all with a returning John Pollock, who I expect to be tanned up. Okay. Looking like Kyle Fletcher with his shirt off. All right.
So, is he coming in? I was going to say, is he coming in with his shirt off?
Yes, he is. Yes. And he'll be slapping me in the face, telling me to do it. Okay. Do it for the Callis family. So that'll be a lot of fun. We say goodbye to our free audience right now. And we thank, Kate from Montreal, while we're here, like with the free audience, any plugs you want to give?
Well, of course, we're saying up tomorrow is the review that Karen and I did for Queen of the Ring. Very interesting discussion that I really enjoyed. You don't get to hear the two of us together that often, so please check that out. And also for Cafe members, of course, I'll be back on Saturday to host Collision Course with John Cena as we look at the very, very, very last moments before the pay-per-view on Sunday.
Collision Course every Saturday with Kate from Montreal and John Cena, and sometimes even me. So listen to that. We've also got Post Pro Res with WH Park, Bruce Lord, and Karen Peterson coming out on Friday. Now an exclusive cafe only show. As I mentioned, MCU later with Daredevil Born Again. That'll be out on the free feed. And later on this month, Pollock and Ting talk. Catch up with us. Catch up with John Pollock on all he did during his vacation. So we say goodbye to our free audience. Post Wrestling Cafe members, stick around as we get to your feedback and questions.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.